This is episode 185 of the Gold Squadron Podcast. I'm your host, Dio Morales, and today I'm joined by Marcel. Jump masters were always wholesome. Manzano.
Never a day they weren't.
Will, it was the best of times, it was the worst of times. Hakewood.
It was an age of TLT. It was an age of auto thrusters.
And Ryan, and still your Lore Master Champion, Stanazuski.
That's right, defending my title, the reigning defending Lore Master Champion.
See, in a sick way, that brings me a lot of satisfaction, because I was the first one to... I lost the first Lore Master Challenge, okay, on a silly technicality. Of, like, what page number was this rule on, okay? I was like, what? Are you kidding? Are you kidding? So I lost the first one to Zach Matthews. And now, because you have it, it's come back home. And it's fantastic. All right, so first, announcements and news. If you guys didn't see it posted on Facebook or the Discord or Twitter or Instagram, I have completed 100% out of my hands, out of my home. All of the Galaxy's shipping is completely done. All gone. Okay? I have the... okay. Let's play a game. Let's play a game. Okay, how much do you think it costs to ship a South African champion a championship belt and all the other shenanigans that he won?
Can you say how much the belt was?
The belt was around $100.
But you're talking about the shipping.
The shipping.
Oh yeah, I know. So weight, size of box, 50.
So I sent something to Sweden that was in a sizable box, and It was 84, so a bigger box would probably about 115 with more weight.
Where's
Ooh, all the... I'm playing Price is Right rules. $51. Sorry, Ryan.
that's the way to do it. Basically
bills.
You're going under Marcel but above me.
Four bills. Who had the highest number? Because the answer...
Wait, 400?
It cost $400.
Wait, what? Did he ship it on FedEx with pillows wrapping it?
Like, no, I shipped it via UPS, not USPS for that one.
USPS would have got you like 125, 130.
Well, yes, but when I was doing some of the research in the area, UPS was a better choice. To make sure that the champion actually got his prizes. So,
actually sent Filippo in Italy a 15-pound box for just under 100 with tracking.
Yeah, I mean, I know that USPS is way cheap. I mean, everything else got sent USPS. It's fine. But the money was there. That's what – when you guys pay for the entry – right, it all goes towards that stuff, and I had to make sure that the champion got his stuff, because from what I was seeing, larger packages sometimes just weren't making it, and I was like, you know what, we're not going to take any risks. Whoop! I'll tell you, I rolled into the UPS store and said, listen, I need to send this to South Africa, okay? And the lady at the counter looked at me and went, what? It's going to be really expensive. And I went, I know.
I'm aware.
I know.
So this is a friendly reminder to all you people out there who may have questioned why you're paying for an online event. These are some of the reasons.
And if you want to help pay that bill, guys, manscaped.com. Okay? Use code GSP for 20% off. It's Mrs. GSP approved. You'll get a nice box like this if you get the perfect package 3.0 right here. Everything you need, and it's fresh. Okay? Manscaped.com. Code GSP, 20% off. Help your boys out.
Keep them Death Stars fresh.
keep them Death Stars fresh. Okay.
Your significant other will thank you.
That's right. All right. So let's jump into today's topic. And I will tell you that I posted a version of today's topic on our Patreon first, just Patreon only posts, just to kind of see what was the reaction from people, kind of dig a little bit. And we had a range of emotions to the question. So here's the question as originally stated, okay? So how could Atomic Mass Games' lack of knowledge of the history of X-Wing affect the future of the game? Now, what is lack of knowledge? Of course, the people working at AMG might not necessarily have worked on X-Wing before. They might not have the experience of working on specifically X-Wing before, but this can yield both good things and possibly bad things. And I want to talk about what those can be, because there's a lot of roads we can go down. Let me preface by saying, overall, I'm excited to see what happens, because I love X-Wing. We just got a bunch of Star Wars announcements, like 10 new series and movies that are coming. We got content for days. Our game will be alive for a long time. We got content, okay? So let's go ahead and start with a little bit of X-Wing history. And I think this is important, especially for anybody who started in second edition and isn't familiar with the history of first edition and only maybe heard it in bits and pieces. I'm going to give a very brief summary of X-Wing and kind of how we've gotten to where we are right now. So X-Wing was released in 2012. At that time, and as it continued to be developed, all upgrades and pilots had a fixed cost, and at the end of the life of first edition, the undercosted cards had basically all been identified. This led to the game feeling solved, and because of this, there was no way to change the game except by adding content into the game. New releases is what drove change in the game. And in order for those new things to actually see play, the new content had to either be more powerful, so raising the power bar, or be at a better value than what had been established before compared to the other meta contenders. So, the undercosting of abilities that increased survivability, undermined the importance of the dial, and decreased dice variance are some of the most cited reasons for the need for change, big change in X-Wing at this point. We end up getting the second edition announced. Everybody's excited. Now, when we moved into the second edition, basically a version of all of those problematic mechanics still made it over into X-Wing second edition, but they've all been, or most of them have been placed at a higher cost in order to keep that design, like it's still there, so the design space is still open, but the points cost is now higher to discourage those things being abused. So at this point, with the creation of second edition, we of course have points changing and half point scoring, which has really evolved the way the game is approached and played. Now, even with these tools, competitive play has driven people to find what's the best list, what are the highest value cards, what's the best, okay? So all of these, like the best meta lists still exist, but the major difference is now, every 6 months or so, the game changes, right? Because there is a major points change. And if you end up getting a player who gets frustrated with the meta, I've seen, you know, the difference in first edition, you would see players say, this game is broken, I'm quitting, as opposed to now you have, this game is broken, I'm waiting to the next points change, which is a better reaction because there is a, like, you know, I'm looking forward to the next thing to happen. If somebody gets to that point, I'm not saying that that's common, but if someone gets there. Now, many times, like I said, the solution is just waiting to the next point change. We've even had two emergency points changes where FFG has gone, we gotta change something because we noticed bad things are happening. Hashtag we are data. Okay, we're one of them, right? one of the emergency points changes, and we've had five points changes at this point overall. So now let's get to AMG. All that stuff's happened. And I want to open up the table. I'm going to read some of your all comments from Patreon. I want to talk to Will, Ryan, and Marcel and kind of talk about what are some of the possible positives and some of the negatives or traps. It's really, I don't want to say necessarily positive and negatives. It's more like, what are some of the positive things that could bring by not having been a part of the history, not having the baggage, the mostly emotional baggage that first edition has maybe given to some people? And what are some of the pitfalls that we hope they are wary of? That, you know, what are some of those things? Ryan, Marcel, Will, whoever wants to jump in first. Actually, I'll let Marcel go first because this is actually his topic. He's the one that put it out there. And I thought it was great. We fleshed it out and here we go.
See, I have a good idea twice a year. And this is my first good idea, so I got 2 weeks to like come up with another good idea. positive, right? We're not burning the house down. No Chicken Little yet.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, positive. So the positive is that some of the ships that are on timeout may have a resurgence. You know, the Jumpmasters. I think the Jumpmasters kind of came back already a little bit. So let's not say the Jumpmasters. But there's a couple other ones that might still be on timeout. Like Biggs. Biggs is on a timeout. The Jedi, Delta 7Bs, are on a timeout because of, you know, I don't even know why, because they never really want anything big, anything major. But the Delta 7Bs are on a timeout. So a lot of the ships that FFG was continuously pushing back as, like, you know, they had this perception that they're overpowered when maybe they weren't. Or maybe they were over... Miranda, that's another example, where they were overpowered in 1.0. Miranda was overpowered in 1.0 not only because of her ability. She was overpowered because of TLT. And because she didn't have the little caveat saying that, you know, you can only regen if you have zero shields. I believe she could regen all the way up to full, right?
Oh, yeah.
Back to all her shields. So I think that, you know, I'll start off with that as one of the positives. Is ships and pilots that got a wrist slap as a result of either perceived or real overpoweredness. May make a little bit of a resurgence. I think, you know, a good example of that would be Lavitz, the First Order Upsilon.
Mm-hmm.
That that one that got like a timeout for about a year.
Are you talking Dormitz?
Dormitz, there you go.
I was like, what?
I'm thinking like about? John Lavitz, Dormitz, whatever. The one that you put and they can like start off at range 2 and then just, you know, come in guns blazing.
Timeout with the new points, but they fixed his ruling a little bit. He can only do it to small ships.
Yeah, exactly. So he was on the timeout until things changed, but ships like Miranda are on a timeout perpetually because her rules changed at the beginning of 2.0, but she's still not good. She's still not costed well because, you know, whatever reason. So anyway, so that's what I'm thinking is a positive.
Ryan?
I mean, just the simple fact that it's new, fresh set of eyes. They could bring some interesting design decisions to the game. The hope is that it would add more to the game on a positive manner. And these are experienced game designers that have worked on other previous Matrix games in the past on an even skirmish level. If I'm correct, War Machine is a smaller sized skirmish based miniatures game, right?
It scales from my understanding, but I mean, It is a skirmish type game.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's essentially what X-Wing is. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, what they bring to it. If it turns into third edition. I don't know. But also it's going to be that balance of making sure that they're just not adding a bunch of new mechanics into the game, bloating it up a ton, and making it feel like it's just too much. I know a lot of people at the end of first edition started to feel, especially with the condition cards that were being first introduced, that we're now currently used to, that first edition was kind of a messy version of the now streamlined second edition in terms of how all those added features that Fantasy Flight decided to add into X-Wing originally in first edition came into play. So the hope is that AMG now has some new things to bring, but won't make it too complicated or hard for newer players to follow.
Will?
I'm going to have to lean in. It's kind of like fresh set of eyes, but more less in game design and more in fluff, the actual fandom of Star Wars. That they've done so well being able to take these Marvel characters, putting them out on for Crisis Protocol. Crisis Protocol, I believe, is the name of that game. I may be wrong in that.
Mm-hmm.
But anyways, they transitioned these Marvel characters, a superhero-based game that feels like superhero combat. And I hope that they can, or would then, be able to take the kind of World War II dogfighting that inspired X-Wing and that X-Wing is in the movies and X-Wing the game we play. Because right now I think we've been stuck on this two-dimensional plane for too long. Right? Mm-hmm. That I would really like to see more like three-dimensional things. I think Starboard Slash might have been one, really imagining going around ships in the three-dimensional space. But I think we got our minds locked on this flat plane that maybe someone else coming in can give us that kind of Star Wars dogfighting experience.
Yeah, I mean, I love all four of those. You know, those are four of the biggest things that I've seen cited as reasons to, quote-unquote, give them a chance, right? Because there are definitely people who are on the side of this argument going like, this is going to be terrible, they don't know anything. You know, these are experienced people who have publicly now, while not in like, so for instance, I know that we've been saying for a while that I've been trying to get interviews. They haven't responded to my requests there, but they have, for instance, responded to people in Twitch chat. I know the head of the studio was responding to people's questions specifically about X-Wing. So we know that they know we care. Because
I'll go ahead and finish.
No, just wanted to say that, you know, while there has not necessarily been an official response to community reaction, they are making efforts, I think, where they can, because of course they are a part of Asmodee. Their hands are tied at certain times, to let us kind of give us a wink and be like, you know, we know that you guys are worried. We're going to do our best. What were you going to say, Marcel?
I'm saying, are you activating your Gold Squadron army to go spam them to say, grant us an interview?
Not yet.
Is that what I heard?
Not yet. No. Stand down. Stand down. Stand down.
All right.
Okay. We'll give them time. And here's another positive. We don't know exactly who, but we know that some staff has transferred over, right? So that's spelled wrong, right? I'm terrible at spelling. Okay. Transfer. There you go. So right now, we know that there's some staff out there that has worked with AMG previously with FFG and making the transition. And, you know, we're just trying to see who... I'm just curious, like, who exactly moved over? We know, for instance, that Max Brooks is no longer with FFG at all. Just doesn't work with Asmodee at all. The people who we know from organized play also no longer work there. Matt Holland, Jimmy Lay, Alex Watkins, those were like the three biggest names in the organized play. They're just no longer with Asmodee at all. But some people who have at least had contact with X-Wing, you know, have moved over. How is that going to affect the game? We don't know. But now let's get into maybe some of our worries. And we're going to keep adding to our lists here. What are some things, some pitfalls that not having the experience of being, what I'm going to say, on the front line of X-Wing specifically, could maybe come up? What are some things that you're worried about? Marcel,
are we done with the positives already?
No, I want to flip back and forth. You know, we got about five or six, and
all right. So I'm going to go back, and then if we're going to the negatives, I'm going to go back to the exact same point that I made, which was some of those first edition timeouts are there for a reason, and they need to stay timeouts for a reason. So we don't need no homing missiles. We don't need no TLTs. We don't need no 360 arcs. We don't need no, you know, we don't. Oh, wait, I was about to sing badly, but I'm not going to copyright strike you. We don't need any of, we don't need a lot. I would say out of all the timeouts that have not been reset, about 80% of them need to remain timeout. We don't need. William, I see you starting to smile a little bit. We don't need no stress Ezra, stress hog. No.
No more
stress Ra.
We don't need no triple defenders. Screens.
No, fair.
Only in squadrons.
Will? Technically, you have five of those squadrons.
Yeah, that's true.
Don't worry. They are not as powerful as they are in X-Wing.
All right, Ryan, do you want to... What is maybe something that you're worried about?
Carnajax. We need Carnajax.
Sure. My concern is something more on the professional end, is the fact that this company... And now, granted, as mentioned, the positives, some staff has transferred. Sounds like not a ton, but little to no experience dealing with LFL. That's a big client to have to handle, both on the making sure it's all story correct within like the lore and the canon, to make sure everything is ran by them on a professional level and that it all passes any qualifications that need to be put through, all the legal fun stuff, everything that a lot of people in the past have had been concerned about. FFG making sure they retain the license, now AMG has to do the same. You know, whether it's spoiler related stuff, whether it's leaked things getting out. You know, I remember in first edition, or at least once or twice, right, didn't we have a few leaks of points or ships or stuff that came out a little too early? Like, stuff is damaging, pretty sure. It's not great. So hopefully the people who have been brought over are going to help with that difficulty. But I recall hearing from a few people that have had the chance to chat with some people at FFG that LFL is a difficult entity to handle. Not that I have not heard bad. It's just difficult. So
I mean, they have the license. That. They can do that, right? They're the boss. They're the ultimate boss, right? Mm-hmm. Now, you know, I want to flip that to possibly add a positive here. So the only in my memory, and you guys can correct me here. So the Force Awakens core set and the Rogue One ships, those were two releases where we had here's the movie and the X-Wing stuff at the same time, right? Like, those dropped simultaneously, which means that FFG had some information before the release of the movie. Now, we don't know necessarily if they had, if FFG ever had the option to go back into the, like, I want to be on the release schedule with the live content, or whether they chose to stay back, right? To stay back and say, we'd rather have the information out there, like, be able to see the movie before we make design decisions. Because there was some weird stuff that happened because of that. Like, we didn't have strikers. Strikers didn't have bombs at first, even though we clearly see them bombing. And there's all, there's, like, literally, like, an art book that says, like, they carry bombs, right? And everybody's going, like, Now, mind you, in second edition, they could always add slots. Now they can, but once you have, like, ability text there, you're stuck. You don't necessarily know who the main characters, or maybe you know who the main characters are. And that's a little bit of a, maybe it's not necessarily positive or worries. It's a kind of like a in the middle of the road, like a question. I don't know how to do that.
It definitely felt like, whether it was by FFG deciding to back off, or whether it's LFL saying it's best to wait till you have all the information, because I felt like there was a quality increase or a better experience with a first new expansion when they waited for the content. Because you're right, the Force Awakens core set, we got a bunch of stuff like Red Ace and Blue Ace and this color person, this Upsilon leader, this Omega leader. We didn't have names. We didn't have these cool abilities translated into upgrades. Or, I mean, what? Force Awakens been out for a long time, and we just got Underslung Blaster, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not that they can never come out, but they may take their time to appropriate the feel of that canon movie feel. Slight pun, I guess, on the canon there.
That-
you know, maybe AMG might try and take the opportunity to say, hey, we want it there when the movie comes out. They might end up with the same pitfalls, though. So, you know, positive, negative, both sides for that.
Will?
This is going to go into the worries section. And it is going to be, you could probably phrase it as, like, pushing the boundaries. And essentially what I mean by that is that we have a couple abilities right now. Some people get triggered by this first example. But things that ignore obstacles is one of them. Dash, struts, Cura, I guess, to some extent. That ignoring obstacles is a game like mechanic. It's a possibility for a ship and ability. But we have it currently in very small things, just kind of scattered around. Like, Kira's very specific, you need to lock. Struts are androids doing very specific strutty things. Dash is like a 100-point ship, so whatever. You pay for that stuff. The other thing is like Force as well. These kind of reoccurring passive dice modifiers, right? They do other things, but they most importantly can modify dice. That these have, well, maybe not the Force. Ignore the Force comment on that. I'm thinking more of the very niche upgrades that only a few select ships can bring. I'm thinking of we were talking about Jake and Kyle. And Dutch, there's a lot of rebel abilities that help one like other singular person.
Mm-hmm.
That essentially, I don't want them to be like, oh, there's abilities in this game that ignore obstacles. We'll just make a whole ship chassis that does that. Or I guess collision detector kind of does it. But say like a more universal collision detector. Be like, oh, just ignore it. These obstacles. I essentially just don't want to see them pushing those boundaries, seeing that there's already, you know, kind of a dip in the water of it. I'm trying to think if somebody else gave me like an obscure ability. Well, we were talking about stress, I guess, right? Mm-hmm. They're like, oh, Forlom can give people stress. I guess, every, you know, shouldn't be a problem if there was a droid in the game that just gave you stress.
We've been there before.
No. It would shoot strain now, of course, because everything's just give your opponent a strain.
Yep.
Which they have ships that do that. They were talking, fear, what is they, Fearless Predators now? Pretty much have the droid built in. So, you took a lot from my ranting, but I guess I was trying to think about it as far as, like, there is very, like, a niche, I don't know another word, very niche upgrades that we allow on certain ships just because as a fandom, because it makes that ship interesting.
Right.
But certainly would not want to see them in widespread use.
Yeah, like, we don't want a generic Dengar gunner upgrade that's actually crew that can go on any ship. Right.
Yeah, no.
Like, we're not looking for every ship to be able to be terrible to shoot at. Type of thing, as I'm assuming what you're thinking of. Like, we don't want to expand these things that are.
Here's another example. Zam, real popular right now. Interesting mechanic. And them just being like, oh yeah, we just hand out a condition card for every ability. They've gotten used to that. Like, no, please don't.
So here's something I want to bring up because it's coming up in the chat. Let me quickly add a what we're right here not worried about at all. Okay, and this is just facts that we know. Okay, ships will stay painted. Okay, I know this is a
painted and assembled.
Okay, things. Okay,
such source. A big deal for me.
AMG direct message via Twitch chat from the head of the studio. Okay, so this is, I know that's some, a lot of people are worried about that one. There, this has come up a lot. Like, are they going to change it because they have unpainted stuff now? They said not changing, it's fine. They essentially look at X-Wing and they categorize it a little bit differently than they categorize it differently than Marvel Crisis Protocol. It's a different type of game to them. Okay, so I just want to kind of get that one out of the way.
I think another one that you can add for things not to worry about is too immediate of changes, because usually any game company will have, you know, a backlog of stuff that has already been approved and gone through testing, and we're probably at least 12 months before any AMG inspired content coming out for game mechanics, not for organized play. I think like the organized play and the tournament scene and all of that will be more immediate. Mm-hmm. But from like ship design and stuff like that, there's enough that's been going through playtesting and other stuff and in future product development that's already down a certain path to where we're probably at a safe spot there. To give them time to kind of like get a lay of the land.
All right. So now let me talk about my number one worry. Okay. This is my number one worry, and it is what made me fall in love with the game. Okay. Will they, misspelling, will they understand the dial? Let me explain what I mean by that. Okay? The dial, to me, is what makes X-Wing an interesting game. Yes, the developers of the game are experienced game designers. Okay? They've worked on Marvel Crisis Protocol. They've worked on Privateer Press materials, specifically War Machine and Hordes. But both of these games have what I'm going to call free movement. Okay, similar to Legion, right? You might have a certain amount of distance you can go, but you're like, I'm gonna go here. You just kind of move it freely. The dial, just the function of how it exists in the game, understanding the fixed nature of the maneuvers, how the system phase, how picking that poker-like part of the game, how much that adds to the that is why competitive players who don't care about Star Wars play this game, is because of the dial. And I know that it's on the surface, it's such a basic concept on how it works, but there's such a depth to it that the abilities that I like the least are the ones that allow you to change the dial. I know that they're good, okay? They're really good in the game. But they're good in the game because they change the most fundamental part of the game. You pay for this, and that is positioning. Right, there's the meme. X-Wing is a game of positioning. But it's true. And if you can have advantage there, it makes a big deal. And, you know, in first edition, we had Intel Agent that took a long time for people to figure out that it was really good. Okay, early on in first edition, even still, FFG was like, "Oh, supernatural reflexes, this is fine. We can make this super cheap." No, okay, that's why it's extremely expensive right now. Anytime you can radically change a dial, it makes a big difference to the game. I will be looking very strongly at how they interpret the dial and how they manipulate it. And now I'm going to go and flip it back to a positive. Because here's the reality. X-Wing has changed hands many times already. It started with Jay Little. We had Frank Brooks. We've had Alex Davey work on it. We've had Max Brooks. We've had, I'm missing the other Brooks. I'm sorry. I interacted with you the least, so I don't remember your name. Was it like Max Brooks and Brooks Mac? I'm sorry. Well, so it was something really, really close.
His first name was Brooke, yeah.
His first name was Brooke. And you know, so like we've had... The game has changed hands before. Now, they're not in the same building anymore, but it's changed hands before, and it hasn't caught too much on fire yet. Those are probably some of my biggest ones. Any thoughts on that?
I think for me, I was actually going to say something earlier about... not necessarily the dial. I like that aspect of it. Just the precision element of it, like how precise it needs to be. Where, you know, I just got my Marvel Crisis Protocol, like the core set, and I've only ever played one game on it. But I know it's kind of like, for lack of a better description, it's kind of like loosey goosey. Like, I'll go in this general vicinity.
Yeah.
Yeah, that looks like, you know. And then if you're looking at like Warhammer and things like that, and they take out like the measuring tape, and there's a lot of like, I guess it looks clear.
Yeah, that's about 12 inches. Yeah, that looks clear. Yeah,
looks about right. Like, it's not that big a deal. It's mostly the dice, right? Mm-hmm. It's mostly a dice game. You don't really position yourself in a way to get a positioning advantage. You position yourself in a way of who will be attacking who and who will be fighting who. Legion, Warhammer, some of the any of those games, right? It's just like, are you in range to roll dice against each other, to let variants decide, and then your upgrades and all your modifiers decide, where X-Wing has a bigger element of, you know, do we have arc on each other and on all of that. So I think for me, similar to you, but I was thinking about it more in the realm of like, not so much in the dial matters because, you know, but more in like the precision of it, where most other games, how precise you are with handling the miniatures and where they start and where they end, it's not that big a deal. It's just the strategy in those games is mostly like, okay, which army or which character am I going to take on which of their characters, and am I going to double team here and leave an opening there versus completely trying to do like the very precise arc dodging and all of that. And again, I may be wrong, but that's just from the very limited exposure I've had to other miniature games mm-hmm. that don't have that very precise measurement.
Yep. Ryan, Will?
So, two interesting things that I think have not been explored in X-Wing that might be interesting from AMG's point of view. One that I find to be a potential positive, and one that I hope never makes its way to X-Wing, but is in a lot of other current tabletop miniatures game. I'll allude to that one first. I don't see why anyone... Not why anyone. I see people who have considered this, but I'm not a fan of bringing what people call the force organization chart into X-Wing. What that means is in other tabletop games, a force organization chart on an army-based miniatures game normally requires you to bring a commander, set units that are considered corps or troopers, and then they dictate things as special units, heavy units, support units, and you can only bring a certain amount of those. I don't think X-Wing fits in that type of game. I don't particularly foresee AMG doing this, but people have thought about this as a potential. So I'm personally against it. I would assume, it looking at the chat right now, a lot of people are not currently a fan of this. But on the flip side, one thing that is explored a bit sometimes in these army-based games is when you create or have special rules for sub-factions, where let's say and start to work with special units, as in complete lists that are based around a type unit, such as like, what if I brought an X-Wing list that was a Rebels faction that was purely Rogue Squadron and had rules that if you brought all Rogue Squadron things, you got something to benefit out of that? Or if you brought all of the 181st TIE Interceptors or whatever, then you would get something special out of it. If you brought all Black Sun for scum, you would get something special out of it. Things like that, that could add a level of sub-faction without making direct sub-factions, but can add keywords to the game and build what people, I think, might be one of the most big missing components in X-Wing on a story side feel, is the feel of your flying in an iconic squadron and getting something to benefit out of it, besides just doing it for fun.
Cool.
So I hope they explore that potential.
Now, one of the other things that I know some people were worried about, but again, this is going back to the source of the head of the studio in AMG during their Twitch live streams, being willing to address some of these things through the Twitch chat. We know that they're aware there is going to be competitive, all right, competitive OP, okay? All right, so we know OP, yes, it's happening. And we have also seen that they've had some organized play that focuses around more themey things, objectives. You know, we were part of the or I was part of the development team that worked on some of the community objectives that we did at the late first edition to kind of give some spice. You know, that could be something that might see some development for maybe not necessarily for the top competitive game, because I think the cleanest way to keep that is likely just the, you know, 206. But at a store level, you can add some variety if you include that. Now, I don't think you should ever replace the, you know, the base game, but if you can include that, maybe for a quarter, maybe one of the kits has a some type of objective thing, which we've seen some story-driven competition things happen in Marvel Crisis Protocol. Seeing something like that in X-Wing could be interesting. Now, how that would work, I don't know. I'm not a game designer, but I you know, it could be interesting. Now, if I go to the well here, if I go to the well of what some of the people were saying on Patreon, let me go ahead and pull those up right now. One second, sorry about that. I thought I had it loaded. I did not.
All right, I got a quick filler one for a worry. This is from our chat. Oh man, my quick memory. I think it was Fast Walker. Yeah, Fast Walker. Mentioned dice. We had talked to stories of old about a potential force dice thrown in. I would be concerned if they ever tried to add or change the dice in X-Wing. I'm sure there could be a positive outcome from it, but I would be very nervous about it.
Oh, should I say what I'm gonna say?
Is it a spoiler? Does it hurt anyone?
Does it hurt anyone?
Yeah. That's like a father talk. Like, will your action hurt anybody? Oh, okay.
Nah, never mind. I won't say it. We'll leave it. Some thoughts need to stay inside.
I gotta know.
All right. So one of the worries, and this is probably the most common. This encompasses most common. This is from Adam Stephenson. He says, AMG could back themselves into a corner with game design. And that is kind of what happened in first edition, right? Where we had this cascading issue of defensive tech got really good. Now we need really strong offensive tech to meet it. And it became an arms race between the two in order to develop X-Wing. Now, again, I think I'm less worried about getting backed into a corner design space-wise, mostly because we do have the point system. And we have seen FFG be aggressive in showing this is too good. It is an admission of guilt. We messed up. This is too good. We're going to change the points on this. We're going to make an adjustment because we undercosted it. So that part I'm not worried about. It's mostly about now that we don't really have to worry about points and upgrade slots. Like, those are two of the biggest points of contention in first edition. I think it's probably mostly, will X-Wing in 5 years? Let's put a long timeline on it. Will X-Wing still feel like X-Wing in 5 years once AMG has had their hands on it? I hope so. But, you know, we'll have to wait and see. A couple of other thoughts here. And this is from Daniel Leon, kind of brings a point about community engagement. AMG has not had the community connection, the people that matter at AMG, meaning the game designers themselves, the OP people themselves. Like, we would talk to and have constant conversations with those people beforehand. We barely know who those people are right now. So as a community, that connection is really important. Think about the relationships that was built between Gold Squadron and FFG, being able to bring you guys all those live events, being able to push for, hey, can we get a bunch of podcasters to come to Worlds and do all of this? And they, you know, they opened up that space for us at Worlds. You know, just being able to have the judges have direct connections to the game designers to ask questions that matter for competitive events. Do they even know who the big judges are who have really helped to drive the community engagement and that are respected in the community? I think eventually those things will kind of work themselves out. But the more information they have to start, I think the better off they would be. So I'm curious to see how that community engagement part will happen. And the thing is that it's the reality that those community engagement things, those specifically, happen off the books. Let's be honest, right? Those happen off the books. It's not it, – there's no, like, official, like, contract, like, all right, judges, we're promising that we're going to talk, we're going to have a monthly meeting and all this. Hey, maybe they could end up doing something more official like that, which would be really cool. But all of those things were the designers and the judges meeting in the middle and agreeing, kind of having the silent agreement like, hey, we're gonna help each other out. All right, cool. We got it. We can do this. Yeah, the Dancing Cake Tin says it fantastic. Comms is a two-way street. Yes. Yes, it is. Now, as we start to bring this topic to a close, are there any other things that you guys want to throw in to this pot? I think we've hit a lot of it. So, for right now, we are.
Oh wait, I got one. I got one. Let me think about how to try to phrase this. But we had gotten. We were personally affected by some of the Lucasfilm licensing situation, whatever you want to call it. Where we had to restrict some of the things we were doing as Gold Squadron Podcast. But that kind of came from the mouse, as people call. Right. I would be interested to see if Asmo, or well, I guess Asmodee, but what Atomic Mass's game's opinion of online versions of their game are. That would certainly worry me if they were like hard fast no. It would be concerning to the future of that kind of online tabletop simulator vassal, by casual integration of the on the online medium. Obviously, we've taken it. New levels, which I'm excited about always, but they could certainly family friendly phrase that would they would not like it essentially,
right?
I guess Bahamut Dragon Lord does mention that there is a tabletop simulator mod for Crisis Protocol. I see the Jaren or whichever one streams, I can't tell them apart. They're twins. Whatever Foss Brother streams, he streams Crisis Protocol, and it does look good. So I would be interested what their opinion on that stuff is.
Now, the positive on that, like you said, Marvel Crisis Protocol is already on TTS, not officially, right? Mm-hmm. Community mod.
Right.
And I think... if I am a company, and I know that this exists, there, yes, in normal times, there were probably some people who only ever played online. Some. But I would think to drive your sales, you almost look at the online existence of your game as advertisement. It's like, you know what? If people are talking about X-Wing, people are talking about Marvel Crisis Protocol, you know, especially right now with COVID, right? We're talking about it. We're staying engaged because we're still excited about the game. And when all of this is over, okay, when all this is over and we can start having and we can start having in-person events again, we're all ready. We're ready to go. When it's safe, all those things are happening, and we're going to continue to be customers. If in this day and age, if a company, if FFG, right, were to turn around and say, you can't play TTS anymore, Vassal, we're taking it all down, I think there would be a big negative reaction to the game. I really think there were, because you're taking your customer base and giving them a big middle finger when they can't play right now. Now, will they do it eventually? Maybe. I think they'd need a replacement. I think that would be the smart way to do it. Say, listen, we understand that these tools have been available for a while, but here is the official online X-Wing that you guys can play. These other things are no longer available. That would be the smart way to do it. Will people still be upset? Yes, because nobody's going to – it's going to probably suck at first, because that's how, you know, the beta and all that stuff, because we're all used to what we're used to. But if they have a solution, I think that would be the way to go.
Do you think that there is a way – is there something they could put into the game that they couldn't replicate in Tabletop Simulator? As like a way to be like, haha, can't do your online X-Wing.
No, because you got physics engines and everything else. So.
Yeah, I don't think they could they? No, nothing they could make in physical, like in reality, couldn't be replaced in Tabletop Simulator.
No.
Well, that's good to know.
So, I don't know if we're getting ready to move on to the next topic, whatever the next topic is, but I'm just going to leave it on a other positive note.
Yeah.
In a not possible positives, but a guaranteed what we know. I'll even go up to the what we know positives, which is I don't know when we're going to talk about it, if we're going to talk about it. I know you guys already Dion, already did something about it. But with this week's announcements, we've been guaranteed a steady stream of new content, new Star Wars content for years and years to come. So what that means for the game and what that means for the Star Wars universe is more content for this game, more content for Legion. Is that what it's called? I don't even know what the other game is called. For the other game, that's not as important. And just the excitement and the buzz around Star Wars continue or even just stay at a certain level and continue to bring in new fans and continue to bring in new content and continue to bring value to paying for that license to stay with an X-Wing. So I think that's a big deal. That's a big positive that we have for X-Wing specifically.
Agreed. And yeah, I did that ninja stream like right after those things dropped. I jumped on and talked about it a little bit, just kind of initial reactions. But we need to take a step back, really analyze what we're getting and then speculate responsibly. Or what are some of the things we're going to be excited about? Obviously, you know, the Rogue Squadron movie. Now, remember, this isn't your daddy's Rogue Squadron. This isn't Rebellion era Rogue Squadron. This is going to be Rise of Skywalker, post Rise of Skywalker, post sequel trilogy Rogue Squadron. But still, it's exciting because it's going to be about pilots, and I think that's the point of why they called it Rogue Squadron. Yeah. So I think I want to end this topic by saying change is always super scary. And in the end, I think we're going to be okay. The game will still exist. We'll evolve. We've survived change before. The game survived an entire edition change with really big things happening. And I am going into it positively. I am excited to see what happens. I'm hoping... Honestly, the biggest question I have is like, AMG, please respond to my emails. That's all I want. That's what I want right now. Okay, that's my number one wish.
Pitchforks army?
Not yet. Not yet. We'll Twitter storm them at some point. Okay, but not the day is not today. Okay. So I'm expecting more from them. Obviously, as the new year rolls around. Because they've been really focused on Marvel Crisis Protocol. And I'm sure once they are ready and they start opening up the world to X-Wing, I think they will, I think we'll get new things. I think we'll get some new things. But let's go into our next topic here. Thank you. Hopefully we're all feeling a little better or at least not worse. After that conversation with your thoughts in regards to X-Wing and the future. Let's go ahead and let's hit the lists of the week, and then we'll do the questions of the week, which comes from our friend, the real Jeff Sanders. We'll hit that in a little bit. Actually, I know he's in the chat. Shout out to him right now, Mr. Sanders. So we'll start with Ryan. Ryan, you want to go first?
Sure.
Here we go. Let's do it. So Ryan's list. What in the world has happened to this? Oh, did this happen? Ah.
It does say old next to it. Weird. Like in the URL rathos.github.io/old.
Old. But
it's a weird link.
It is. I will fix this. Sorry guys. One moment, please. Technical difficulties.
Spoiler alert. Here I will talk about at least the thought process of one agent stack. They are trying to find a place for the Y-Wing from the Rebel Alliance, Evan Verlaine. Is the power of 3 green dice enough to keep Dash alive? Should I drop the Astros and turrets for an advanced proton torpedo on Dutch for a 1-point bid? Well, let's get into the list.
Ready.
We have Dash with Bistan, Perceptive Copilot, and Outrider. We have Dutch with Dorsal and R4. We have Evan Verlaine with Dorsal and R4. Let's get the elephant out of the room first. Building a list, try and find a place for Evan Verlaine. Evan Verlaine is that's not good, really. neither is tethering Dash to Evan Verlaine or tethering a ship to Dash. Dash is going to get far ahead and get out of range of Evan Verlaine to follow really well, because Evan Verlaine's just in a Y-Wing. This isn't Jake Farrell, who's able to move around and support ships much easier. And Evan Verlaine spending a focus for herself at the start of engagement, I believe. Yes. To allow friendly ship at range 0 to 1 to roll initial defense die while defending until the end of the round. I do not like Evan Verlaine, as I mentioned, but hey, we are trying to build with Evan Verlaine, but I don't think Dash is the right spot. I think this is where we start putting to the test an old archetype that we have not seen in quite a while, and that is a Rebel Synergy Defense Damage Mitigation Force. And we are going to do that by first axing Dutch and Dash all together, and we'll just dump the R4 Astromech on Evan Verlaine for now. I know I'm changing a lot. It's probably out of the rules a little bit here, but you gave me Evan Verlaine here. All right. I feel like I should be awarded some freedoms. So we are starting with the baseline of every single damage mitigation rebel list as possible. Biggs, Darklighter. It's going to be added to the list. And then on top of that, let's add his old buddy, Lorik. And then I thought, well, this other pilot, this fourth pilot, just went down in cost a little bit. The platform's been actually doing kind of well recently. We've seen the online Polish Nationals have some success with the Hawk 290 in the Jan Oars version. We're using the Kyle Katarn version because we are passing focuses around to not only help out Evan proc their ability to maybe also have mods on offense, but also throw Lorik a focus, who would want to shoot with a focus because he normally wants to take that reinforce for his ability and because it's an awesome tuck. So we got a lot of points left for some upgrades. We're definitely throwing Moldy Crow on there. Definitely starting with that. Gives us 3-die attack out the front and makes Kyle Katarn hold on to those focuses. Almost 20 points left in any Rebel list. I think it's a solid place to throw Leia Organa somewhere, and we're going to put that on Lorik. Lorik's a sturdy platform, and Leia can help Lorik and Kyle do some zero moves and help Biggs and Evan do some 4Ks. And then we're going to also throw more damage mitigation on that list, and we're going to throw Selfless on both Lorik and Evan Verlaine. And after that, I think we're left with a couple, some points to allow some bombs in there. And because we're going to be kind of hurting to do any real damage in the game, let's see if we can add some auto damage. Let's do thermal detonators on both Evan Verlaine and Kyle Katarn. You can mess around with that being seismic charges if you want, any 3-point or less bomb at this point. And then finally, 2 points left. Probably the best 2 points spent in this list, just because it's super cheap for what it does. We're going to throw engine upgrade on Kyle. Small ship base, white boost. It's better than a red boost, so we don't care about the bid. And here's the bonus. They're all I3. So you have a nice block that's easy to move around in any order you want. And yeah. That's my first shot at Evan Verlaine. And hey, like I said, we have not seen real attempts, I don't think, at these damage mitigation rebels in a long time. Can this work? Maybe. Do I believe in Evan Verlaine? Not really. But here we go.
All right, so what's your final product there?
Final product, Lorik with Selfless and Leia Organa crew. Evan Verlaine with Selfless, Dorsal Turret, and Thermal Detonator. Biggs with the S-Foils. And Kyle Katarn with Engine Upgrade, Thermal Detonator, and Moldy Crow.
All righty. First time caller says, I want to see you play this on Wednesday, Dion. Oh, been called out. Okay. I'll take it under advisement. Alrighty. Where are we at next? Let's go. Let's hit up Marcel. Marcel's list. Got some Jumpmaster love. What's going on here, Marcel?
Let's see. Let me read what he said first. So this comes from DMC Jin. He says, Damlam is a big base blocker with a dead man switch at 43 points. Seems good. He sets up Dengar, who has mods for days for both his of attacks. Both gloriously die, leaving Fenrir to mop up in the end game. I would love to put Fearless on Fen, but I think the bid is probably more valuable. Has a pretty deep bid at 190 points.
Hey, quick note. I think this is Dan McGinn from the Burps. You know what I'm talking about?
Okay, Dan McGinn. Oh, Dan, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, from South.
Yeah.
From Nick's store, from Dragon something store.
Yeah.
Very cool. All right. So I don't have to be nice to him. Cool. just got better. Sure. Sorry, Dan. You shouldn't have told me that. I was going to play nice.
Oh, here we go. Okay. I'm sorry, Dan. I'm sorry.
All right, Dan. I hope you're ready. Okay. So he's actually got a pretty good bid. You know, a healthy bid. 190 is near and dear to my heart. I like it, especially with two initiative sixes. So let's... You know, he wants some jump masters. I love me some jump masters. So let's do some changing around with these jump masters. I like Dengar. So let's keep Dengar, but as a gunner, not as a pilot. So let's switch Dengar to Tel Travura as a pilot. And then we'll move Dengar over to be a gunner for Nam Lam. And my new favorite upgrade or combination of upgrades is Nam Lam with Dengar and Zem Wessel crew. So add Zem as the crew. And this is just so much fun to be. Wait. And then you put a plasma torpedo on them. In this particular case, you can put a proton if you want. But for right now, we're just going to do a plasma because he kind of wants a bid. But it adds such a cool dynamic to him because you put your thing on him, you know, you guess whether it's going to be, you know, the free target lock. Essentially, you're putting the free target lock on there. You're throwing him up front to get shot at. And then whoever shoots at you is going to get a torpedo double modded because you'll have your focus. And then you'll have your torpedo going off. Let's also give him an ion because I think most people will avoid shooting at him, especially if they're at range 3. So if you give him an ion, then it just makes people want to shoot him a little bit more. And you don't need that man switch because they're not going to shoot him, so he's not going to die very fast. So let's put contraband cybernetics on him. And this is quickly becoming one of my favorite combinations. Zamoth, Wessel, Torpedo, and Nam Lam. And Dengar, because Dengar also clears that green token away. And then on Tel Travura, we're going to get rid of the title. And let's give him Auto Blaster and Marksmanship with a hull upgrade so people don't yell at me.
He did it.
I'm learning.
Mrs. GSP approved in the chat. Let's go. Here, I got you.
I actually played William with this, and the hull upgrade actually was the difference between winning and losing. So I'm starting to creep over to saying, okay. And then you throw Fearless on there as well. Something's missing, though, because I think you got a lot of points, don't you?
Yeah. You're at 204.
Marksmanship instead of expert handling. And no Han Solo. That's what's wrong. Yeah, we don't need Han. So that leaves you at 195, I believe, right?
191?
Oh, wait. 191, no, we want to get up to 195. Throw an ion torpedo on Tel Travura. Because part of the other thing is Tel Travura, because he comes back to life, people don't want to shoot him. They want to go kill Nam Lam or they want to go kill Fenrau. You want to make Tel Travura a more, you want to make him a juicier target. So you go ahead and put some ion torpedoes on him. And you know what's better than moving after someone is knowing where they're going to end up even before you set your dials because they're ionized. So with an ion cannon and ion torpedoes, you are accomplishing that. So that would be if you're trying to fly, Dan, if you're trying to fly jump masters, this is probably close to what I would do. But let me make one more change on this because you're going to like this better. Go ahead and get rid of Tel Travura because we don't like hull upgrade on Tel Travura. I can't admit to that quite yet.
All right, let me save this one. Okay, killing Tel Travura.
Mm-hmm. And let's make Nam Lam a little bit more aggressive. Let's throw a proton instead of a plasma on him.
Okay.
And then let's go with Old Turok and Fearless. So just hit another Fang fighter. So you still get, you know, the same ships on there, but now you got a five, you know, your blocker that nobody's ever going to shoot. They're going to try to avoid them like the plague. And then you got Fenrir with Fearless, Old Turok with Fearless. And you don't have much of a bit, but who cares? Fly better. Block. That's why you got Nomla.
All right.
I'm actually really interested in playing this with the two with two Fangs and Fearless. I think it might be all right.
Can you give me that rundown before we move on here?
Sure. So it's Nam Lam. Now, this is the cornerstone. If you're going to fly anything, fly this 69-point nice. Nam Lam, no matter what else you put on them. It's Nam Lam with Proton Torpedoes, Zem Wessel, Contraband Cybernetics, Dengar Gunner, and Ion Cannon. And then you have Fenrir with Fearless and Old Turok with Fearless.
All right. And last but not least, we're heading on over to Will, who's going to look at a Republic list that was submitted by Nano Antonio.
All right. Let's see what the prompt was from Antonio. It says, Yoda's I3 sense to better know whether to execute intuitive controls. That's the reposition these ETAs or ADAs have before they move in the system phase. Right when sense triggers. Patience to help a four-starved Yoda and Obi-Wan and Annie doing Obi-Wan and Annie things. So as I just read, Yoda has sense and patience. Obi-Wan has Ion Cannon and an R5 Astromech. That's the repairing damage cards droid for an action, which is pretty good with his ability. As you move in, you can get a free focus, or essentially trade your force for a focus and heal, which is as good as an evade, just healing your ship. Let's see, then Anakin has Extreme Maneuvers, which is Daredevil for Force users, Marksmanship, Auto Blaster, R2A6, which is the Change Your Dial Bearing, Change the Speed of Your Dial by 1, and Stealth Device. It comes in at 192. Now, I've been staring at this for a bit. I have some experience with the ETAs and apparently ACEs this year that I do not know if I would ever want to fly this. Now, I have been flying or have flown three ETAs, Anakin, Obi-Wan, and I had Shaak-T, but her and Yoda are about the same price. But I always put in a torrent because I don't think that the triple ETA has enough legs. You really are over-reliant on that force. And which really hurts these particular pilots is that from my experience, you normally have, you should be rotating your aces. You know, two coming in on the fight. Then one skirts out and then the other one skirts out and get this triple rotation going in. But all of these abilities, the combination between Anakin and Obi-Wan, their abilities look for range 3. Yoda also looks for range 3. So you're going to have a harder time kind of doing that ace flip around and switch and stuff. I do think Anakin's good. I do think the Obi-Wan's good, but, I think I'm about to nuke this list as well. but keep the Yoda. I mean, keep the premise of it. And I think this is what I've been thinking of, or this list is inspired me is that I wouldn't want to fly three Jedi aces. I would much rather fly four Jedi aces. So we're actually going to keep Obi-Wan. We're going to give him a jamming beam, though. Or, excuse me, keep Yoda. Give him a jamming beam. Don't forget your jamming beams. All right. That's a three-dice gun when you could really need it sometimes. And then we're going to drop the other two. Boom, boom. Goodbye. And we're going to pick up a different ETA. We're going to pick up Shakti. Give her a jamming beam and patience because she's so pretty good. I do love the combination here because Yoda essentially steals Shakti's ability and they can bolt as long as they're close to each other. Range two, I guess. They essentially can both carry around evade tokens, which is so useful. Trading your force in for an evade, fantastic. That's how you're going to keep your three health ship alive. But I mentioned four aces. I might get some. We'll debate their ace quality later. But I'm going to put back in Obi-Wan Kenobi, but not in the ETA. I'm going to get him in the Aether Sprite with calibrated laser targeting. Because just like how I imagine Yoda steals Shakti's ability, Yoda also steals Obi-Wan's ability then too, or at least can help out with it. Obi-Wan's in the Aether Sprite says, "Enter a friendly ship of range 0 to 2, spends a focus token, you may spend one force." So that could actually be not Obi-Wan spending that force, Yoda spending that force to keep that ship nearby, as long as everybody's kind of in ranges here. I'm going to bring in one other ship in, so you can just clone that Obi-Wan and make it Ahsoka Tano. Ahsoka Tano, not really new. Whenever she stops being Snips, was when she became my girl. But we're going to throw her there in two. And I think that she's going to play a kind of valuable part in this. Don't have enough for patience on her, but what can you do? Because that sense not only informs Yoda and Shakti if they need to do any sort of like emergency intuitive controls. Most of the time they're going to want to be spending that force on other abilities than that pre-position. But that sense is going to be amazing in a pinch. But it also lets Ahsoka know about her coordinating then too. So she can coordinate Shakti, a better role. And you really, what I'm trying to build out of this list is that each one of these ships plays off of each other, right? Like, you don't need to use Shakti's force to bear a roll if Ahsoka just comes up and gives her a bear roll with her force. And Ahsoka doesn't need to burn her force with that if Yoda could just use his force for that. You know what I mean? You kind of get this kind of group aspect from the Jedis. And I just don't think you're going to get that group aspect from a triple ace squad, just because you have to do so much running and flanking that your ships are rarely helping each other out. What I would imagine the Yoda would be. I mean, these are all what was it? Justin Brown was flying a lot of four aces, or excuse me, not four aces. Four Jedi in hyperspace for a long time. We flew four Jedi in our team tournament last hyperspace season because he was so enamored by it. And it becomes the same kind of thing. Ahsoka helps Plo Koon. Plo Koon helps Obi-Wan. Barriss helps Plo Koon. Like, that kind of give and take back and forth. Reminds very Rebel, in my opinion. Except for you get to do it in cool Jedi ships. So, I'll give that breakdown again. Kept the Yoda exact same, but I added jamming beam. So that's Yoda with sense, patience, jamming beam. Shakti with patience and jamming beam. Obi-Wan Kenobi with calibrated laser targeting. And Ahsoka Tano with calibrated laser targeting.
Fantastic. Now, I want to remind you guys that anybody can submit lists for List of the Week, just join our Discord, exclamation point Discord, or click the link in the description down below, and you might be featured here on the podcast. Also, under the resources section of our Discord is where I went back and I updated all the lists of the week, and this one will be updated after the show, so we have an ongoing record there of what we've done to the lists, and we can have them for shenanigans like our Wednesday night flight club streams and the sorts. Now, I do want to remind you that we stream every Monday, Wednesday, and Saturday. Wednesdays in the evening starting at 5 p.m. Central, going to 11 p.m. Central, and now Saturday mornings starting at 9 a.m. Central. We're getting in four games a stream. That way we can play, if we have these nights where each of us play a game versus community members for Toasty Defense Squad Day. You know, rip Toasty. We went 2-for-2 last Wednesday. If you missed the action, so sad. And we just get more games equals more X-Wing. All right, let's hit the question of the week, which we actually danced around a little bit already tonight. So Jeff Sanders says, so now we have a good idea of where Star Wars is heading over the next 5 years. Do we think the move from FFG to AMG was to help make the game system more agile? Okay, so I'm not sure if Jeff is saying that they may have known about some of the, that there were big projects coming or not, but specifically are asking about making FFG or the X-Wing more able to move faster. And the second part of the question is, I'm thinking there may be some pressure to get movie/TV show releases to happen sooner so that Asmodee can get a better return on investment due to market interest. This is very true. This is an interesting point. What are your guys' thoughts first before I give mine? Anything out there? Anything that jumps to mind?
Bueller.
All right. So
Bueller.
So we discussed the idea of having ships release earlier. I think it's to the financial benefit of both Lucasfilm/Disney and Asmodee. The sooner the ship related to the movie comes out or the show, the more they will sell because people are more excited about it. It is just a fact that is unquestionable. Now, the more they delay, the more it fits into the fluff of the game. So it's completely dependent on where's the precedent. Now, if there is a standing order from Lucasfilm that says, wait until the content is released so that you release something that lines up with the canon, because they have been very... what's the word I'm looking for? Keeping the canon consistent has been something that they've cared quite a bit about, especially with the revamp of our current canon. Not even revamp anymore. It is just the current canon. That's really the way we should be talking about it now. Versus looking at X-Wing as just a merchandising opportunity, which, of course, just like every business, merchandising is super important. So I don't know. If we see things releasing faster, we know that Asmodee is trying to make a little bit more money off of X-Wing. And that it's a business. Of course, they're going to prioritize making money. But I think the excitement of getting ships released closer to the show is a big deal, especially that we know that there are people who buy X-Wing models and who don't care about the game. They're just high quality models that are affordable compared to other Star Wars merchandising. I've seen like X-Wings, right? These small X-Wings by like Micro Machines that are $20-$30 that look bad. I'm going to say bad, or they don't look as good as our miniatures for X-Wing. So I would rather have one of those if I want something cool that looks on the looks just cool on the desk or on a shelf, I'm going to buy an X-Wing tabletop miniature over the Hot Wheels, but Hot Wheels and Micro Machines are going to release theirs first, for sure. As soon as they have all they need is, what does it look like? What does it look like? All right, put it in a box. So, that's that.
I think you bring up a lot of good points, Dion. And really what struck me as a recent example is that Heroes of the... Oh, man, I about said Atari. what is that new box? Oh, man. With the A-Wings.
Heroes of the Resistance? What is it? Was Heroes of Hope. Something Hope. There's Hope in there.
Yeah, it's H-O-H. That's right. Yeah,
Heralds of Hope.
Heralds of Hope. Thank you, everyone. Anyways, Heralds of Hope is a direct movie tie-in to The Rise of Skywalker, but came out year and a half later.
Yeah.
2 years later. I don't know. Time's weird and these.
I think we're just about to get up to the first year of Rise of Skywalker being out. So 10 months?
10 months. Okay. Yeah. It's only, we've only been at this 1 year. That's right. So there's definitely some like latency issues in that. And I'm sure that they had a lot of that stuff. Like they were thinking ahead, right? They just needed like the paint job and like a couple other key factors to be pushed through when the movie was like publicly released, right? But I don't see that as the Rise of Skywalker expansion. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. because of that 10-month latency, I don't really connect those two at all. To your point that like Disney or Lucasfilms would have to require people to wait. Have you seen some of the toys that they've released? there's a lot of bad ones.
There's a lot of bad ones.
A lot of awkward
yes.
ones. I mean, Legos, granted, Legos kind of like its own big deal or whatever, but like Legos has stuff like before the movie comes out, you can buy the Lego expansions, right? So
yep.
I definitely think it was always on FFG to be like, I would prefer a better product.
Right.
Than, and we talked about it earlier too, about how Red Ace, man, Red Ace and Epsilon Leader, or actually Epsilon Leader was okay, but Omega Leader?
Yep.
No. I don't care. It doesn't matter. Those names were bad though. And I think that we will see probably about the same amount of latency. I don't know how they could get a better product quicker. Does that make sense?
Oh yeah, for sure. Yep. We'll have to wait and see. And by the way, when it comes to Mandalorian stuff, I want to push our no spoiler policy until the new year. Cause once we hit the new year, we're cracking it open. Okay.
Cause I think I got in trouble for that already in the chat.
Yeah, so we're gonna push it back. Once we're post New Year, at that point we'll open it up. You know, the finale will have been out, and we can talk about it because there's so much to talk about. So hopefully you all enjoyed our discussion today. I think we hit on a lot of important things. I feel like today was kind of like a heart to heart, just starting to get a little more comfortable in knowing that change is coming. Change is not necessarily always bad. There is going to be some things we don't like. There's going to be some things that we're going to look back and say, I'm not sure why we were worried about that. But I think it's important for us to have these discussions. That way we can kind of pre-experience the emotions. Now, one thing I want to address is when I brought up this topic, I had more than one person reach out to me in a, I'm going to say, there were strong emotions in their response.
Less than pleasant.
Less than pleasant. There were strong emotions in their response to my question. They were upset that I asked the question the way I did. Okay. Now, I would hope that after the year, literal now years, of me being you know, it sounds really corny, but a public figure in X-Wing, you guys know I have a pretty level head, okay? When I bring up these questions, there's always two sides to the story, and we try as much as possible to talk about both sides. It's right, but the reality is there really is that question. AMG does not have the history of X-Wing. And all of the both positive and negative things are questions in our minds, and I think it was just important for us to talk about. So for those of you who were able to really, you know, internalize this talk and hopefully you know, have had a positive experience talking through it, because I think that's also part of it, is being able to have this conversation on a level head. Because in a comment section on a thread, it's really easy to get combative with somebody, but this is more of a conversation. This is more of a conversation. So hopefully, like JD Bestis says, he says, Dion, you usually talk me off the ledge on most things. That's good. That's good. I'm glad that we can be the middle, because we get to have this conversation between the four of us, and you guys are part of that. And thank you to all of you who are a part of that conversation and give us a chance to explore these topics and these ideas, because that's what a podcast is. All right, guys. So thanks for watching, everybody. Stay safe. Stay smart. We will see you Wednesday night with more X-Wing action. Gold Squadron out.